Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Franchise Interviews on Blog Talk Radio, where we're asking the franchisepreneur who owns one. I'm your host, Marty McDermott, with my co-host, Don Johnson. And if you've ever dreamed about owning your own business, then you've come to the right place. Today, we have a great show. We're meeting with the president and CEO, Gary Occhigrasso, of the Desert Moon Franchise Opportunity. And Desert Moon is the East Coast original fresh Mexican grill franchise. Desert Moon is the fresh, healthful alternative to fast food since 1992. And at Desert Moon, it's all about the food. Fresh ingredients, big flavor, made to order, zero trans fat, high fiber, low fat, with gluten-free, and key organic items. Their modified table service is set in a fun, fast, and casual environment. And that's coming up in segment two of Franchise Interviews on Blog Talk Radio. Our first segment today is being brought to you by Franchise Interviews, LLC, and Franchise Interviews gives an up-close, behind-the-scenes look at franchising and entrepreneurship through our website, franchiseinterviews.com, where you can hear and read interviews, as well as get inside tips from some of the most successful sources in franchising. Our weekly franchise radio show on Blog Talk Radio, where each week you get to hear new interviews with franchisors, franchisees, franchise authors, franchise experts, and franchise attorneys. And our monthly franchise newsletter, which is a must-read for anyone looking to buy a franchise. And Don, welcome back to another edition of Franchise Interviews on Blog Talk Radio, February 21st, 2008. It's a cold one out there today, isn't it, my friend?
Yeah, typical February-type day here in the East.
Looking forward to March.
Definitely. Spring's right around the corner.
Yeah, baseball season, right?
Yeah, got spring training going on. That's always pretty exciting.
Absolutely. And I know you just got back from Florida, didn't you? So it must be tough to... I was in Miami several weeks ago, and you were in Orlando.
Just right after you. I was down there at the International Franchise Association, put on a great franchise show.
You said it was good this year, right? I guess compared to other years, I think you like this one a little better this year.
Yeah, this is interesting. As opposed to a lot of the franchise shows that we mention on the show, the ones that we exhibit at, this one were different suppliers and vendors to the franchise industry are actually exhibiting. The franchisors are at meetings, they're at conferences, so there's hundreds of franchisors and just a lot of people just in the franchise industry in general are all down there, and they just put on a great show, the IFA. They really give the franchisors a lot of incentive to come into the exhibiting hall.
Right,
all kinds
absolutely.
Of food and raffles and games
that,
and stuff going on. It's really, and it's always nice seeing our clients, customers. We were there exhibiting as Diamond Financial Services, of course, and as well as promoting this show.
Absolutely.
Just a good time.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And then we got the show coming up in Washington, not that far, right? I guess that's in May or June this year. I don't even remember.
Well, the DC, the IFE show is coming up in April.
Okay. It's right around the corner, isn't it?
Yeah, that'll be here soon, so that's always a great show.
That's
always nice seeing friends and everybody.
Absolutely.
But the IFA show was pretty, they had Colin Powell as a guest speaker.
Oh, did they really? Oh, you didn't tell me that.
Yeah.
Oh,
so,
did you get to see him? Or?
No, I didn't actually get to hear it, but I understand it was pretty impressive. He has a real good sense of humor.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And, it's a big, a real big thing.
Right. That's great. Well, our last show, Don, we met with a very special guest, Dan Rowe of FranSmart. And for over half a decade, the FranSmart brand has stood as a symbol for quality, innovation, and success. Some of the opportunities that FranSmart works with are Chicken Dijon Franchise Opportunity, City Walk, Elevation Burger, Marvelous Market, Mr. Greek, Prime Pubs, Rockin' Baja Lobster, Ciandella's, Vapiano Franchise Opportunity, Z Pizza, and I know Dan was mentioning that they recently took on a new one last week as well. So I thought it was a great and very informative show. Do you have any thoughts on last week?
Yeah, I mean they're just a nationally known company, FranSmart. It's the major franchise consulting, franchisor services. They really do a lot. And just interesting, all their concepts are food, and they also have Firkin. Pubs.
That's right. I forgot to mention that. Yeah, Birkin.
He really knows franchising. Obviously, he was a great guest, and
he does. He was a franchisee at one time. I think that's how he actually got his start in franchising. But he was mentioning, FranSmart is a portfolio of emerging brands, and they're not a franchise broker, Don. I think some people might confuse them with being a franchise broker. They're much more than that. They FranSmart invest in the brand, and what they do is they make it better.
Right.
And he also mentioned that they do a lot of strategic marketing planning for the franchisee. They help franchisees with their business planning, help them find the best real estate, which, you know, we've spent a lot of time on the show talking about how
yeah.
difficult that task can actually be, and also train their employees, or their franchisees, I should say, on how to hire employees,
right.
which is also difficult as well, isn't it?
Yep, and yeah, I think it's interesting how they take on a concept that they feel has a lot of potential and just maybe needs a company like theirs to point them in the right direction and really grow it. And I forget the number he gave, that I think each of these opportunities, he feels, could each have about 1,000 locations nationwide.
Number.
I think
yeah.
that's the goal.
And I think he got that from, like, using, like, we're very familiar in this part of the country, like TGI Fridays, I think, has 1,000 units
right.
in the United States anyway. Bennigan's, you know, places like that, you know. So that's the goal. And I believe he's pretty selective as far as, you know, what franchises they're actually going to take on, you know, and become clients. But they specialize in selling, he was mentioning, Don, like large multi-unit deals. You know, they're not looking for like that single-unit deal,
right.
you know, where somebody's just looking for a job. These are probably people who are looking to make more, I would say, more money than just a job, actually.
Right, yeah, it's definitely a little above-average type investor who's coming in and signing a multi
Right, absolutely.
Your multi-restaurant type deal.
Yeah, and he gave some great stories, too. He mentioned Five Guy Burgers. He took them from, like, they were like a mom-and-pop operation. I think it was the mother, the father, and there was, like, five sons or something like that. And I think they had, like, about five units and grew them to about 200 units. You know, he was mentioning, too, like, right now what's going on in the industry, and you know this, Don, is, you know, over the last 6 months there's been a shift from, like, a landlord market to a tenant market, you know, so
right.
that's a real opportunity, I think, because he's in that restaurant business, and I'm glad we're having Gary on the show today. You know, he'll talk, I'm sure location is just as important to him.
Right.
How difficult it is to sometimes just get that location. So I think right now is an advantage to a prospective franchisee as far as getting a location today versus maybe 3-4 years ago.
Yep, and it's so pivotal in the whole process. Not only find a strong location, but to have the right terms on that lease.
Sure, absolutely. I guess now, you know, you have a lot more negotiation power.
Right.
And, you know, location is so critical, especially in this type of business. You know, you really want to be...
Right, a couple of shows ago, we went over some tips on negotiating with a landlord.
Sure, absolutely. And
but we'll have to maybe bring that up again in a, you know, another few weeks. I mean, maybe go over that again.
Absolutely. So I just thought it was a great show, you know. So if you didn't hear the show, for our listeners today, you know, you can go back to last week and go to our show page on Franchise Interviews on Block Talk Radio. You can go to franchiseinterviews.com, and right on our homepage you can actually click
right.
and listen to the show right online, you know. So, but great show. I think we're going to have him back, because I suspect that FranSmart is going to grow significantly
right.
over the next year. I mean, you and I have been following them for a while now, and I know you've actually financed some of their franchises as well.
Yeah, working a little more closely with the company now. Yeah, you know, hopefully we'll get, you know, busier, and it's, you know, probably going to be the case with so many concepts they have.
Absolutely, absolutely. So what do we got going on today, Don, and over the next week or so?
Yeah, today we're meeting with the president and CEO, Gary Occhigrasso, of the Desert Moon Franchise Opportunity.
Oh, great. There are
Desert Moon is the East Coast original fresh Mexican grill restaurant. They offer a fresh, healthful alternative to fast food. They've been around since 1992. Next week, Marty, we're welcoming back our friend and legend, Michael Gerber.
That's great, isn't it? It's just, I'm really excited about that because, you know, as you know, you're going to talk about, you know, Michael's new book.
Right, right, which is called Awakening the Entrepreneur Within.
That's right.
I think it's going to be released just next week, probably around the time we're going to be interviewing Michael.
I think
Michael.
The following week it's being released, yeah. So it's nice to have Michael on the show, you know, before the book actually comes out. You know, I think
right.
that's fantastic. So really exciting.
You know, a quote from him is, a business without a dream is like a life without a purpose.
Yeah, it's, you know, and you and I mean, we were fortunate enough, Don, we got the manuscripts of the book. You know, Michael's people were kind enough to send it to us, you know. So
right.
it's, you know, and I told you, I started reading it, you know, and I couldn't put it down once I started reading it. It's just, it's different from the E-Myth. I mean, the E-Myth is just such a successful book. This right. is a little different, you know. It's very motivational, You know, after you read the book, you know, Michael gets into dreaming and all that other stuff. And, you know, you and I are going to have to attend one of his In the Dreaming Room sessions, which is out in San Diego.
Right.
Talk to Michael about that, you know, and get out there. And
for people not familiar with him, he's a best-selling author, international small business guru. He created the E-Myth Worldwide in 1977 to transform the way that small business owners grow their companies.
Right.
And now he's created In the Dreaming Room as a place where entrepreneurs and future entrepreneurs come to discover how to make their dreams a reality.
Absolutely.
He says here, Michael's dream, to inspire people to dream by awakening the entrepreneur within them. Michael's vision, to be the authority for helping dreamers everywhere create the small businesses they once could only imagine. Michael's purpose, to transform the lives of ordinary people by providing them with the thrill of creation while creating the means to generate their own and others' economic freedom. Michael's vision, to create a turnkey system for awakening the entrepreneur within every person who wishes to go into business for themselves while providing them with the support for doing it. And he's done it. And awakening the entrepreneur within, you're invited into the dreaming room.
Yeah, it
sounds like a great place.
It really does. You know, it's interesting because when we had Michael on the show, I guess it was last year. I want to say it was last March.
Right.
He was pretty much just launching this new concept in the dreaming room. And I don't know if you remember, he's got such a great personality. You and I were talking to him and asking him all these questions, and he's like, I got to go write the book, you know? It's just
right.
Funny.
You and I motivated him.
Well, there you go.
You think that could have happened?
I think it was more his mom than anything else.
Yeah.
It's such a great story, you know, how his mom inspired him to do this great thing. You know, I mean, after achieving so much success with the E-Myth, you know, you say, where do you go from there? But
He just keeps going. I'm sure he'll do something again in a few years.
I sense that, yeah. I mean, here he is. I believe he's 70 years old now. And so I'm just looking forward to it. It's just great to see him. He's just such an inspiration, you know, to so many people. In fact,
right.
I remember when I was speaking to Gary last week, I know that he plugs the E-Myth a lot, you know. And very common in franchising. You know, you hear all the time. Carol Mercurio, franchise broker, we've had her on the show a couple times. I think she gives a copy of the E-Myth to all her new franchise
prospects, clients.
Yeah, I mean, it just makes so much sense, you know. So it's just great. You know, I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be a lot of fun having Michael back. That's great. Well, you know, over the last year, Don, we spoke about how many more franchisees and franchisors are giving back to the community. And this was an article, and I think Gary's actually associated with this website. He introduced me to it, franchisemoneymaker.com. And there's an article on here talking about avoiding these 7 business giving pitfalls. And the article is by Maggie F. Keenan. And I thought I would just kind of talk about some of these things. When we had like a franchise on, like, let's say, like Yum Brands, you know, Yum Brands gives a lot back to their community. You know, I think they have something similar to like the Ronald McDonald House.
Right.
So anyway, it says here, so here's my list of most common pitfalls businesses make with their charitable giving. Avoid sticking with pink because it's popular. Simply because a particular cause is popular is not the right reason to make it an area of focus for your giving. You have to clearly align your causes with what makes your company stand for. You know, so I guess if you're like in like a, let's say like we had several weeks ago, like that dog daycare franchise on, you know, I'm sure that they give a lot to like the ASPCA and organizations
right.
like that, you know, so makes a lot of sense if you think about it. Avoid thinking your business is too small for a giving program. No business is too small for a giving program. I hear so often, my business is too small. It's just me, and I only give to a few charities. If you're in business and you give something, then you too can make a difference for your bottom line and that causes you to give.
Avoid, good point, yeah.
Yeah, it is a good point. Avoid treating like an aside project. It says, this is a biggie and leads to your giving not making an impact on your business. Avoid, it's a good way to get PR. All right. Here's my take on this. If you want to get your name out there and get others to know about your business, then hire a public relations professional. That's so true. You know,
right.
I think some businesses, they really do give for the wrong reason. They say, wow, maybe we'll get some press, you know.
Yeah, you really have to keep it separate, you know.
Sure, absolutely. Two different animals. Avoid not talking with your financial advisor or your tax advisor. It says not all giving is considered a charitable deduction. So don't get stumped at the end of your year. If you find out that all of what you gave cannot be a deduction on your tax return. That's interesting.
Right.
Avoid giving a little to a lot. Don't feel obligated to spread your generosity. When you do this, several things happen. First, you don't get to convey your unique, compelling community involvement, and so your message kind of gets lost in an already overcrowded marketplace. And avoid forgetting to create a communication plan. Consumers hold companies to some standard of doing good, you know, and you see that so much more today, you know, and it's, I think it's a, it gives franchisees a good feeling, you know, to kind of give back to their
right.
community, you know.
It's a good article because I've had companies, you know, charitable organizations call here.
Right.
And, like, you always feel guilty when you can't give something, but you can only give so much. But I thought, you know, everything was tax deductible. So this is pretty interesting. That
it is interesting.
Not all
I didn't
is.
Know that either. You know, I was thinking everything was tax deductible, you know. But I guess maybe, I don't know if it has to do with maybe nonprofit organizations or something like that. I guess, again, we'd have to talk to our accountants about that, you know, how that all works.
Right.
But, yeah, that is. It's just, so I thought it was a great article, and that came from, I believe it was franchisemoneymaker.com.
Right. So, the whole overview to the story is, it's, you know, just make sure you give, but just, you know, be careful in the process.
Sure, absolutely. And, you know, and it is important to give back to the community, you know.
Right.
Christopher Reeve had that great saying. He goes, when I do good things, I feel good. When I do bad things, I feel bad, you know. So it just, it makes a lot of sense. It does, I think, make your employees feel better to give back and create
right.
a lot of goodwill in the community as well, you know.
Right.
So it's a really great article. And I know you had a couple of things that you wanted to announce as well.
Yeah, as usual, we like to tell people around the country about some franchise shows. Our friends at the Franchise and Business Opportunities Expo, two shows coming up I'll mention next weekend in Denver, March 1st and 2nd.
Right.
It's having a show. And then a little ways away, mid-March, March 15th and 16th, it's the New York, New Jersey Franchise Expo at the Meadowlands Expo Center.
Oh.
I went to the show a couple years ago.
That's
it's
right.
in my neck of the woods. And anybody who wants to get further information, times and all that, can go to usfranchiseexpos.com.
Oh, that's interesting.
Their toll-free number is 800-891-4859.
Hmm.
And, you know, as we get closer to the April IFE show, we'll start discussing that a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also, here's something, Marty, from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Great American Cookie Company sold.
Yeah, I heard something about this.
The owner of clothier Bill Blass ice cream chain, Marble Slab Creamery, and shoemaker The Athlete's Foot has bought Atlanta-based Great American Cookie Company, Nexen Brands, who we've been speaking about lately. They've been making some pretty large acquisitions.
Right.
They're headquartered in New York. They operate out of Atlanta. They bought this company from Mrs. Fields Famous Brands for $93.7 million, Nexen said Tuesday. Robert DeLauren, president and chief executive of Nexen, said Great American Cookie is a strong brand with an opportunity to grow. It was really underdeveloped. In our view, he said, I believe it was treated as a stepchild.
Interesting.
I guess he sees all kinds of potential with the company.
Right.
Great American Cookie Company was founded in 1977 by local entrepreneur Michael Coles, who later made an unsuccessful bid for one of Georgia U.S. Senate seats. Interesting.
Really?
They talked about Great American sales last year were about $26 million, operating income of $13 million. It's just incredible how much you can make with even something like cookies. And I'm sure they have a few other things and drinks. The company has almost 300 stores, mostly in the U.S. So Nexen continues with their acquisitions. And, you know, my company has financed some of their, you know, ice cream.
That's right. I remember you mentioning that, yeah.
Franchises. Here's something, Marty. Wall Street Journal by Ray Flandes. A look at high-performing franchises. Food's grip loosens as diverse concepts pop up and do well. It starts out, it looks like franchising is no longer dominated by a single sector. The fast food industry's power grip on the franchising industry is slowly loosening as industries serving the consumer and residential markets are expanding rapidly and performing well financially, according to the Wall Street Journal's list of 25 franchise high performers. The big performers are a diverse bunch, including a dance studio, senior care facility, a veterinary hospital,
right.
and a moving company. In fact, there are now more than 230 lines of businesses that do franchising, according to Fran Data,
wow.
out of Arlington, Virginia, who we've, have closely looked at their information. We get a lot of information through Fran Data.
Yeah, they're great at providing information on the franchise industry. And 230 lines, that's a lot, Don. That's a big change
right.
since from even when we started doing the show.
Right.
You know, so it just goes to show you. I mean, I don't know if you remember when we had Nancy on several weeks ago, actually, from Franchise Times, talking about the porta potty franchise. I still can't get that out of my head. You said, my God, you know,
yeah.
It's just all these different things, you know.
Right.
So many different industries getting into this whole franchise.
Yeah, a couple of their high performers, they mentioned Abbey Carpet and Floor, Arthur Murray Dance Studios,
right?
Banfield, which is a pet hospital, Bojangles, Famous Chicken, Culver's, Frozen Custard, Dale Carnegie Training, Denny's, Friendly's, Homestead Senior Care, Jimmy John's Restaurant, The Maids International.
Wow.
Nathan's Famous Hot Dogs. Can't tell you how many hot dogs I've bought from them over the years.
Oh, absolutely. I know, you know. And these are, you know, companies that we're going to have on the show over the next year, you know.
Definitely. ServPro, I've been financing them for a while. Stanley Steamer, we've used them at my residence.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, these guys are all on the waiting list, you know, to come on the show. So, I mean, it's just,
right.
It's fantastic.
It says, in the hottest growth by both unit market share and by fastest growing industries, as measured by new units, is taking place in the services industry, such as health and fitness, security, and consumer franchises.
Right.
It says, banking on baby boomers, Homestead Senior Care, the franchise on the list with the highest average net income growth, has benefited from the rise of elderly care industry and is poised to serve a large demographic, baby boomers. The trend is still growing in the senior market, senior care market, says Lori Kaiser Block, president of Franchoice, a franchise broker out of Minnesota. People still need some help with their parents and need somebody to help them within their home and living outside their homes. Or living with assisted services. We just did a show a few weeks ago with Visiting Angels.
That's right.
A very
great
good
show,
you know,
yeah.
Talking about all that.
Absolutely.
Experience also seems to be a boon for franchisers. Most of the companies on the list, 23 out of 25, have been franchising for at least 10 years. For instance, net income at Arthur Murray International, Inc.'s 149 Arthur Murray Dance Studios, rose an average of 84% over the past 3 years. The Coral Gables, Florida company has been teaching people how to ballroom dance since 1912, has been franchising since 1939.
Really? 1939?
Yeah, that's what they have in here.
That's interesting. Wow, we're going to have to get them on the show then. I didn't realize.
Right.
He's been doing it that
long. It makes them the oldest franchise on the list. I think this is new information for us.
Yeah, remember we had, when we had A&W, not A&W, Yum Brands, and they
right.
own A&W restaurants. I know they've been franchising for quite some time, too. I think, I don't know if it was back in the 1930s
right.
or something like that. It was pretty old, but I didn't realize that these guys were doing it for that long. That's,
yeah.
that's incredible. Interesting.
It says, slower pace ahead. In 2006, nearly 3,000 established franchise brands expanded their unit totals by an average of 4%, and more than 300 companies began franchising for the first time, according to International Franchise Association in Washington and FranData. But with many predicting an economic slowdown and banks tightening their lending criteria, I know that firsthand, the number of both new franchise units and new concepts could start to ebb. The pace of growth is going to slow, says Daryl Johnson, president of FranData, because banks are getting risk-averse. Consumer-focused businesses such as restaurants, lawn care, and handyman services and computer support could see some downturn this year. Customers start tightening their own wallets in response to cooling economic conditions. In particular, fast food and casual dining businesses, while still showing strength, with eight names on the list, are also facing pressure from wage and food cost increases. Maybe we can speak to Gary about that a little bit.
Right.
Below operating costs, several food franchises already are shuttering some locations. The food marketplace is getting crowded, says Mark Kidenap, managing partner of franchise broker KRA Franchising LLC in Scottsdale, Arizona. There are so many choices in franchising today that people will start in the food area but then drift toward a lot of other opportunities and segments in franchising. And that's true because we've had some franchise consultants on. People always look to food, and food is still the, you know, the big player, and there's so many great concepts, you know, like Desert Moon.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
But, you know, there's a lot of other concepts, a lot of other types of businesses people can get in now with franchising.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, I always go back to, you know, Carol had that great quote when we had her on the show, you know, saying in her experience, you know, and she's in the Northeast franchise broker, how many people want to go into a Dunkin' Donuts simply because they like the product.
Right.
You know, and, you know, she mentions that you could buy a cup of coffee and a dozen donuts without buying the whole glass, you know? And it's interesting. But,
well, it's all part of the due diligence. You got to decide what you... you know, want to do and what's going to be the hours
right.
involved in that business. And there's just so much to consider when starting up a franchise. You really
absolutely.
Have to make sure you're going to Well, you've always said it's like a marriage.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, today we have a great show, Don. We're meeting with the president and CEO, Gary Okigrasso, of the Desert Moon franchise opportunity. And Desert Moon is the East Coast original fresh Mexican grill franchise. Desert Moon is the fresh, healthful alternative to fast food since 1992. Gary Okigrasso, President and Chief Executive Officer, joined Desert Moon in 2000, and he began his franchising career in 1984, you'll find this interesting, Don, as a franchisee of Dunkin' Donuts of America. In addition to operating a successful franchise location, Gary developed a wholesale baked goods business servicing Pathmark supermarkets and 83 other accounts. He served on the Dunkin' Donuts Franchise Advisory Council, Gourmet Stores, and initiated a brand development strategy, which led to the the development of opening 53 franchise units. In 1991, Mr. Okigrasso found GPM Consulting, a franchise and brand development firm, which successfully developed several national franchise brands. In 1994, working with the founders, he launched the Ranch One franchise system and grew into a chain of over 50 operating units. Mr. Okigrasso is considered a franchising and branding expert and a leading franchise strategist. He's invited as a speaker to many regional franchise forums and is a board member and advisor for several emerging franchise brands. Hey, Gary, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for inviting me on today. I've been listening in the first 20 minutes or so, extremely informative.
Oh, good.
Great to hear, you know, the discussions surrounding Michael Gerber and the great work that he's done over the years.
Yeah, I know you're a fan of his too, Gary, as well. You know, you mentioned when you and I spoke last time that, you know, big fan of the E-Myth, so...
Absolutely. I like to consider myself a student of Michael Gerber's philosophy and also believe that early on when I was a franchisee of Dunkin' Donuts, as you had mentioned in the introduction, and thank you for that great introduction, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
My life as an entrepreneur really changed when I discovered Michael Gerber and began to really understand the concepts behind running a small business and truly being an entrepreneur,
right,
because I went from a franchisee / employee. I was running my business as an employee.
Right.
I jumped from that to really understanding the various components of following my passion and dreaming and truly building a business, which is what launched ultimately my career in the franchising business as a franchisor and as a franchise consultant and brand development consultant, because I began to pull away from simply focusing on the technical aspects of running a business.
Right.
So I guess you could say I'm a fan of Mr. Gerber's, yes.
I can tell.
Yeah, same with myself, Gary. Hi, it's Don Johnson.
Hi, Don.
Actually reading the E-Myth, again. I mean, it's the type of book where you really should... you know, give yourself a little refresher course and maybe read that book every few years.
You couldn't be more right. I actually keep a copy of the CD version in my car. As you might imagine, I travel from time to time, and I use my car a lot. So I have the CD version of the E-Myth Revisited in my CD player. And it's four discs, so four of the six discs that my car allows me to load up have the E-Myth in it.
That's fantastic.
Cool. So sounds like you're definitely going to be listening in or
listening
to the archive show next week.
Gary.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, and, you know, I started reading his new book, Gary, and, you know, if you love the E-Myth, I mean, this is just, it's different. You know, it's one of those books where you really walk away motivated and inspired. You know, it's really exciting what Michael's doing now. So,
well, I heard you got an advanced copy, so you'll
I
need
did.
To let me in on how I get on that inside track.
Absolutely, yeah. He said he'd kill me if I passed it on to anyone. But we always like to start off, Gary, say, you know, where are you calling from today?
I'm actually in Danbury, Connecticut. I'm doing some restaurant visits with some investors later on in the day who we are looking to partner up with here at Desert Moon as we really fill out our funding needs to grow the company. So I'm actually out at one of our restaurants in Danbury, Connecticut.
All right, great.
Interesting. I see you have one in Howell, New Jersey. I'm just a couple towns away. I'm definitely going to be going there with my family in the next couple of weeks.
Well, I'll have to assume you're a regular customer then.
Yeah, we actually have one in Pennsylvania here too, Gary. We have one in Exton, Pennsylvania, which isn't that far from where I am too. So,
absolutely.
Connie and I, you know, we're planning on getting there in the next several weeks. You know,
right. You know, that's been our focus and our strategy certainly since the time that, you know, I created the strategic approach to Desert Moon, really focusing on the East Coast where the fresh Mexican concepts have been underserved, and it's really an underpenetrated market, which may be bad for consumers because there's not a lot of places to get good fresh Mexican food, but it's great for franchisors and business developers and entrepreneurs like myself and our franchisees,
right,
because the opportunity to select great real estate and bring the concept to the East Coast is wide open. I don't know that I would be able to say the same if we were talking about pizzas or burger or subs, because essentially those types of concepts are saturated. So it's a unique situation we're in.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. I mean, Connie and I mean, we love Mexican food, and it's just hard to find a place close by, you know.
So yeah, and the, you know, the interesting aspect about the cuisine, and I've obviously learned about the cuisine since coming to the company in the year 2000. I was actually brought over here after I had left Ranch One, and I was brought here really with the sole purpose of creating the operating platform and putting the things necessary in place to create what I refer to as a scalable company ready for duplication, really to build out our plan, which is about 480 stores at this point. That's what we're looking to build out. But the unique aspect of fresh Mexican food is that, or the Mexican cuisine in general, is that because of the various regions in Mexico, be it up near the Texas border where you have Tex-Mex food,
mm-hmm,
or up in the Baja area near California, you have Baja-type food. When you're in the New Mexico, Arizona area, you have more Sonoran-type cuisine. And these cuisines are influenced not only by the Spaniards, but these cuisines have been influenced by Native Americans. They were certainly influenced by the Anglicans, really all the settlers that came into that market. When you get into the coastal regions of Mexico, certainly along the Gulf Coast, you have a lot of Caribbean influence. So Mexican cuisine, and I will say that my wife and my daughter, I'm not so sure they're huge fans of Mexican cuisine any longer, because I take them to every Mexican restaurant I can possibly find. But for someone who loves Mexican cuisine, such as myself, and even, I guess, for folks who simply like the cuisine, what you find is that there's a huge variety and a great history to it. And it's long overdue that what all the folks out in California have been enjoying for decades is now beginning to make some inroads, and we're planting some flags here on the East Coast, primarily in the Northeast.
Why do you think, Gary, this hasn't happened sooner? You just think there hasn't been that, you know, quality players like yourself really bringing something nice to people?
It's a great question. I think there's an evolution in what we'll classify as ethnic cuisine. I'm of Italian heritage, and so certainly growing up in the New York area, I never was lacking for Italian restaurants or pizzerias or things that were really created, companies that were storefronts that were created by immigrants in this part of the country. I think the same is true in California, where you have a lot of Mexican immigrants and Hispanic immigrants who are bringing their cultures and their flavors to that region of the country. Eventually, as people, as immigrants spread across our nation, which has always been the model, I think they take their cuisines with them. So it's, as I said, long overdue here on the East Coast, and I think it's just a natural evolution of how these cuisines develop and really become part of American culture.
I agree.
Right. Can you describe for us, Gary, a little bit the history of your company?
Sure. The company actually began in 1991, was started by a local restaurateur in Westchester County, New York, whose son had visited Arizona, went out to Scottsdale, Arizona, and discovered or became familiar with the cuisine at the time. It was really called Southwestern cuisine. I'm not sure the nomenclature of fresh Mexican had been coined at that point. came back to New York and explained to his dad, you know, you have to taste this food. It's great. It's a healthful approach to food. Things are made fresh to order. And yet it's fast. It's like a fast food type cuisine, but yet it's nothing that most folks would believe or think or equate fast food with.
Right.
So his dad allowed him to take the chef from their fine dining restaurant in Westchester, New York, out to Arizona. They looked at the cuisine. So the concept, the Desert Moon menu, is really chef-driven, was created by a chef named Kevin Sullivan, who's a CIA grad. So this was not invented by chemists in a laboratory trying to come up with some concoction that, you know, how can we prepackage this and make it quick and easy. This is actually a chef-driven menu. And they opened up several, when I say they, the original family, opened up several food court units in the New York and Connecticut markets. And then in 1998, it caught the attention of a group of investors, Wall Street investors, who made an investment in the company and quickly made the decision that they wanted to take this young, family-owned, entrepreneurial-type company to a more professionally managed organization and create a franchising program around that. And they put a management team together, myself included. I was asked to be on that management team at that time. And my team has essentially worked the last several years on everything from decor and design of our facilities to the brand position, documenting menus, standards, operating procedures, creating the supply chain, looking at the real estate criterion, all the things that go along with the successful development of a franchise brand. And that takes us up pretty much to the present day, where now that myself and my team have created this operating platform, it's a scalable concept, and we've now gone to market looking to fund the program to take our concept, which was originally a four-unit concept when the team started. It's now a 20-unit concept, and we're looking to take it to a 450-unit concept, and we believe there's plenty of opportunity right here on the East Coast.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I think so also, Gary. My wife and I over the years have always said there's never any quality Mexican restaurants around.
It's true.
Just incredible. I know, I've always been to Monmouth County. I know Long Branch, New Jersey has had a long-time quality Mexican. I forget the name offhand. You probably know of it. I'm sure you brought your family there.
I probably know of it and definitely won't mention it.
Yeah. But, I think, you know, you're right. As far as your goal on how many you'd like to see someday, I think that's definitely attainable. Because everybody that I know likes Mexican food, but just don't have many quality restaurants around.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Absolutely. And we've wrapped our concept around a complete corporate culture. It's not simply burritos and tacos. I think earlier in the program, you were quoting an article. Actually, Maggie, I use Maggie's articles on my website, franchisemoneymaker.com,
right,
quite often. And, what we do, and her article was about giving, and that is one part of running a business and giving back to the community and creating that goodwill. But we've wrapped our concept around a complete corporate culture that really lends respect not only to our guests and to the food, certainly to our team members. We're a green concept. We are always striving to make sure that the fact that we're making money and supplying a product and a service to our guests doesn't negatively impact the environment or impact it as little as possible on the negative side, and there's been great innovations with that. We always look to become a better, more socially responsible corporation. So the culture, the fun, the vitality, the energy that surrounds this food that we serve really creates a whole package that really rolls over not only to the outside world in our brand positioning, but also to the guests that frequent our restaurants every day, to our team members, our shareholders, and the people who will be involved with Desert Moon who we haven't met yet. And that's always exciting, knowing
right,
that we're going to be meeting folks who are going to get involved with us, and we don't know anything about them at this point. That's truly the adventure of it.
That's great.
Interesting. Well said. Is there anything you wanted to add, Gary, to the franchise system, describing Desert Moon?
Well, you know, I think we hear a lot of cliche statements from folks in the franchising industry, things like be your own boss and simple operating system and, you know, just so much of it. And I think that what the franchisee or potential franchisee will find when they look at Desert Moon Fresh Mexican Grill, or really any solid, and I use the word solid franchise, when I use the word solid, I mean one that's taken the time to understand their business, that understands that their business is dynamic and not static, that as a franchisor, you must continually innovate, you must continually quantify, and you need to have, as Michael Gerber talks about, the three aspects of the innovation and the management personnel and the technical people, so that you can execute and know that your franchisees have a system, that if they apply that system, the system, they will run the system and the system will run the business. And when you look at Desert Moon and you look at the years of work that we've put into it to, I'll say, perfect the system, although perfection, we're always striving for perfection, I think franchisees will find that Desert Moon really does offer a unique, challenging, profitable, and very, very rewarding opportunity. And I could say that about a lot of franchisors, but since Desert Moon Fresh Mexican Grill is the one that I'm operating, I'll be talking about Desert Moon Fresh Mexican Grill. In addition to that, you know, what I would tell, you know, potential franchisees, entrepreneurs, or potential franchisors who are really the market that my franchise consulting firm worked with. We worked primarily with franchisors, but I would strongly recommend that they go and visit franchisemoneymaker.com, because it's not an advertising-driven website, so it's not dictated by the advertisers. It is a website filled with information that is written by industry experts, writers on the topic, franchisors, franchisees. There's just a ton of what I'll refer to as very unbiased information up at franchisemoneymaker.com. And certainly folks can register and get a monthly newsletter from us also if they don't want to visit the site every day.
Yeah, it's interesting, Gary. We should look to, you know, the show has a few website-related websites, and, you know, we should maybe look to link and do stuff like that. I'm, you know, definitely going to check it out.
Oh, it's a great website. Yeah, it is, Gary. I mean, you can see we referenced it this morning, actually.
And I appreciate that. And that's part of, and again, we derive no income from that. I'm an advocate of franchising as a business development tool. I happen to think it's perhaps one of the greatest business development tools ever created. I love that you can take a set of fundamentals and bolt it on to an operating model and then develop that model into the hundreds or sometimes thousands of units that we see on the landscape every day of our lives.
Yeah, well said.
And also the fact that just really anybody can be successful running the business as long as they have the passion and the work ethic, really.
And, you know, that's a great point. I do several seminars a year on the topic of franchising, and I'll tell you, I don't think that there isn't a meeting that goes by that someone in the audience doesn't raise their hand and ask me what I think, quote, the best franchise is.
I get that all the time, you know, myself, Gary, being in financing, people always asking me.
Same here.
Yeah, and, you know, first of all, ultimately, that's a money question, and I'm one of those folks who believe if you chase money, you won't get any. You know, my response over the years has always been the same. It's not about, quote, the best franchise. It's about, really, what is the best franchise for you? What's
right.
your passion? What do you love to do? What are you good at? Because, again, you know, quoting Michael Gerber, once you get past that infancy stage where you are the technician, or as we say in our business, the chief cook and bottle wash, you then need to expand your business by getting started on the work of an entrepreneur and bringing the technicians and the managers in to work with you on your business. So to simply ask what's the best franchise is to simply say what's the best automobile. I guess the issue is what's the criterion? What are you looking for? What are you good at? What's your background? And most importantly, what are you passionate about? If you're not passionate about building a business, then chances are you'll get exactly you'll get exactly what you may be passionate or not passionate about. And in the case of a lack of passion, that would be nothing.
When people ask that to me, Gary, I say there's thousands of franchises. How the heck do I know?
There you go.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's a very, for experienced franchisees, and I think you alluded earlier in the top of the show regarding some of the work that my friend Dan Rowe at FranSmart is doing. You know, there are experienced franchisees, certainly the type that Desert Moon is seeking, who have background in the food industry, who understand the business model of franchising, have an organization, and they take a system like Desert Moon Fresh Mexican Grill, and they plug it into their already existing system. And that's one type of franchisee. And then you have another type of franchisee who is the first-time business owner, the entrepreneur, the person who is dreaming of operating their own business and developing a business, whose approach is extremely different. Their approach is much more from a technical aspect, much more local. In the beginning, many of them work, you know, 70, 80, 90, 100 hours a week. Essentially, they buy themselves a job. And I don't mean that in a negative way, because in the beginning, for the first-time business owner, if they're involved in a business that they're unfamiliar with, that's a great way to learn the business. And then they, you know, and then they develop from there. So there are different types of franchisees, as well as different types of franchise companies and business models. So I'm convinced there's a good fit for everyone and anyone out there who wants to pursue the use of franchising as a development tool for themselves, either as a franchisee or a small business owner that wants to duplicate their business but doesn't want to open up a bunch of company stores. They want to use franchising as a tool. There are plenty of opportunities out there.
It sounds like Desert Moon will go in either direction in getting a new franchisee, either that already existing business owner experience or the first-time owner, right?
Absolutely. We obviously are cautious about who we bring in as franchisees. If you look at the what I refer to as the three-legged stool of a successful franchise operation, the three legs are the concept, the operator, and the location. The first piece, the concept, I'm confident regarding Desert Moon Fresh Mexican Grill because we're a 16, 17-year-old company with a long operating history of success.
Right.
Location is something that is always up for grabs with potential franchisees because it's elusive in the sense that you need to understand what makes your operation work. So locations look different to different types of operation. But the other piece, the operator, who is the franchisee, that's key. Even in a great location with a great concept, the wrong franchisee could fail. Because the franchisee is the pulse, is the heart of the business. The concept may be the brains, the location may be the legs, if you will, how it stands, but the franchisee is the heart of the business. And what the franchisee takes to the business really will set the tone.
That's interesting.
So we're very careful about franchisees, whether they're experienced or first-time business owners.
That's interesting. What do you look for in a location, Gary, speaking of location?
Well, for us, we have a very flexible footprint. The concept grew up in mall-based food court units, so we're real good at non-traditional locations. As a matter of fact, we're currently negotiating some contracts with large master concessionaires to do some college campus locations and some airport locations. But one of the first decisions my team made early on was to take the concept from the mall-based units, which quite honestly, people love our product, and they loved our product, but from a marketing point of view, we were simply the Mexican option by default in a food court. You've got pizza, burgers, subs, salads, Mexican. So there wasn't a lot of marketing effort and location strategy placed behind the concept. Going out on the street is a completely different thing. We needed to become very, very aware of where our guests come from, what their travel time is like, why they're using us, how we create occasions to use, how we market, what is the right size, who are the right co-tenants, should it be a freestanding building, should it be an end cap, should it be an inline unit. So when we gathered all that information and looked at all of that information, and we're constantly improving on that. As a matter of fact, we're currently discussing some tools with a company called GeoView that does trade area mapping, definition, saturation models, a great company. As a matter of fact, it might be interesting to have one of the folks from that company on, because they work not exclusively with franchisors, but many of their clients are franchisors, because the art/science of location is critical to everyone. For us, if it's an inline unit in a shopping center, we look for a good, strong daytime anchor, like an upscale grocery store such as a Trader Joe's or a Whole Foods, or in this area, King's. We look for some good nighttime drivers, such as a video store or a multiplex movie theater. We love co-tenants such as Starbucks or Panera Bread. And the reason we mention those co-tenants, because they attract and go after the same level of guest, the same type of guest that comes to Desert Moon. Desert Moon is not a 99-cent taco, here's my coupon, drive-through type concept. We've built our brand based on quality, flavor, a healthful approach. Our service time is in the 3 or 4 minute range, so it isn't something that you could pull up to a drive-through for. So we look for that 1,800 to 2,200 square foot unit in that community shopping center where we literally tuck ourselves in and we become the local Mexican restaurant for the folks in the community, and then we get involved in a lot of outreach into that community, be it involved in social groups in the community, Little League efforts, senior efforts. We really go out there and we work within the community to establish ourselves, not as simply, you know, a business here to take your money, but as a business concept who is your neighbor, and we are part of the community. So we look for very unique and interesting aspects in our locations.
That all goes back, Gary, to, like you said, franchisee is the key. So besides the work ethic, I just want to ask you a little bit more about what types of characteristics you look for in a franchisee. I guess you want someone who's comfortable going out to the community and doing all these things you mentioned.
Absolutely. I'm a big believer in you train for skill, but you select for qualities or by qualities. And I think individuals who are passionate about people, individuals who are passionate about our mission statement and our brand position, are the folks that really have the qualities necessary to run our business, and probably many others, but certainly they have the qualities to run our business. The technical aspects, we train them at our training center, but we can't train someone to have a great smile. We can't train someone to respect employees or to get out into the community and talk about the benefits of better, more healthful eating or getting involved with community groups. Those are qualities that people have. Training, you don't train folks for that. So that's what we look for, those unique qualities in people that really set them apart.
Right. What is the training like, Gary, for new franchisees?
We have a very extensive and comprehensive training. It's a total of 7 weeks, of which 4 weeks is at our training center in Danbury, Connecticut, where we teach our franchisees and or their managers the nuts and bolts of the business, the prep, how we maintain our quality statement, how we create fresh products for our guests. We look at the counter service. We look at the modified table service. They're trained actually on how to operate the grill and the hot table and make burritos, although it is not our goal for our franchisees to be the people who are actually making the burritos. But we understand that they need to have a fairly good knowledge of the technical aspects of it. And then it's another 3 weeks in their restaurants when they open, and we get very involved in the management aspects. How do you quantify that business, make sure that, you know, your roadmap, your strategic plan, your business plan is being followed, and how you measure up against that. So it's very comprehensive, taking in everything from, you know, how we grill our steroid-free and antibiotic-free chicken to how we create a school lunch program with a local public school where we bring in tacos once a week to the kids.
That's great.
Interesting, yeah. I mean, it must be a pretty good feeling for the new franchisee going out there knowing they have a product that, you know, I think across the board most people like, and there's always going to be competition, but with your type of restaurant, they're not like on every corner like a pizzeria, so I'm sure that's a pretty good feeling for someone starting out.
Absolutely, and one of you earlier on used the term that franchising is like a marriage, and it is to a certain extent, and what I preach and teach to franchisees, not only of Desert Moon, but of other brands when I come in contact with, is that franchisors need to really go shoulder to shoulder with their franchisees. Franchisors, rather, need to go shoulder to shoulder every day with their franchisees. That nothing is perfect, nothing is easy. People often confuse simple with easy. Things can be simple, but not easy. And that it's to be expected that the franchisees may have difficult challenges or some fears or doubts or questions. And I think the basis of the relationship and how the franchisor communicates with the franchisee on an ongoing basis really determines not only the success of the franchisee, but the success of the franchisor. But at the end of the day, the people, my customers, as the president of Desert Moon, I can tell you my direct customers are not the folks who are buying burritos. My direct customers are the folks who we're awarding franchises to. The franchisees are my customers, so I need to take care of them. I need to understand their needs. I need to fill those needs, and I need to continuously be innovative so that we can pass new ideas, new products, and new services to them. That's what they purchase. That's their expectation.
Yeah, I think you've gone about this whole way, you know, in the correct way, Gary, just taking the time and investment to set up Desert Moon the right way, and now you're ready to really start to, you know, to grow. But taking this time is going to really benefit future franchisees because you've, you know, taken all this time to make sure that everything is done right, leaving no stone unturned.
We believe so. There are enough franchise companies that I've seen come and go where they open up one unit and start selling hundreds of franchises and talk about, hey, we've sold 1,000 franchises this year or some ridiculous number. But at the end of the day, you've got to deliver on the service. You've got to support the franchisee because, quite honestly, unlike most other sales transactions in franchising, the relationship doesn't end when you sign the franchise contract. That's when the relationship begins.
Right.
Yeah, I know from a financing viewpoint, and lenders we work with, they'd rather see a franchise system with 50 units with no failures than, say, 400 or 500 with a 10 or 15% failure rate.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's true.
Absolutely.
Is there a typical day for a Desert Moon franchisee, Gary?
Well, not being a franchisee, I'm not sure I could speak to that with any great expertise. However, I think in the restaurant business and the people business in general, nothing is typical.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly there are procedures and processes that happen every day from fresh grilling our chicken and our vegetables and our tofu to servicing the guests to making sure that all of the team members are satisfied in their needs and, you know, keeping the restaurant clean and marketing. And I think those daily procedures are the typical piece. But what happens within those categories on any given day are generally new and exciting because you're dealing with people.
That's great. What's the best way for someone to get more information, Gary, on Desert Moon franchise?
On Desert Moon, the best way, they can visit desertmoongrill.com. So it's www.desertmoongrill, and we use an E on the word grill.com, and gain some information from there, and also contact us for some additional information. And if they're interested in franchising in general, Desert Moon or not, they should visit franchisemoneymaker.com.
That's fantastic. Well, I got to tell you, you've been an incredible guest, Gary. We're going to have you back because I think there's more to talk about.
Yeah, so much experience. I've had a lot of success, Gary, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anytime, you just give me the call. This has been an absolute pleasure. I completely appreciate the opportunity to be part of this.
Thanks, Gary. You have a great day today.
Take care, Gary. Thanks for coming on. I'm going to get back after I visit that Howell restaurant.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Gary.
Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank
Be well.
You.
Thank you. Take care.
Great show, huh, Don?
Yeah, very
so informative.
Well spoken, very knowledgeable guy. Is really. And I liked his whole approach to how he's building Desert Moon.
Right.
Because he brought up a good point, and we'd finance some of these, franchise companies that really have a lot of growth, and unfortunately, sometimes people don't make it. But I like his whole strategy and how he's, having that slow, steady growth, making sure everything's done right, and now he's all set to really start to, grow the brand.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I mean, you don't want to get too big too fast, again, sometimes I guess we've seen some franchisors pride themselves as far as, like, selling, 1,000
right.
units in a year. I remember even Wendy's at one time, they were growing so fast. They're getting too big too fast. And what was happening was their franchisees were running into problems,
Right.
And they had to start closing down restaurants. And you don't want that to happen either,
Right.
So it's, so you're right. I love his approach.
And when you're doing your due diligence as an investor, a potential franchisee, I mean, these are the things that I would look for.
Right.
Seeing how long someone has been working to set up the system. And, when you speak to the other franchisees of Desert Moon, I'm sure they'll have great things to say about the company.
Right, absolutely. Well, I tell you, it's I'm definitely planning on getting there in the next couple of weeks, It's Connie
right.
and I love Mexicans, so, if we can get to that Exton location. Because, where we are here, in Pennsylvania, we don't have too many
right.
Mexican restaurants, and yet we love it, So
right.
he's really onto something, I think, It makes a lot of sense to
I'm
expand.
Talking to my wife about it tonight. We're definitely going. I was serious about that.
Well, the problem now is, aren't you hungry? I'm hungry.
It's close to lunchtime.
It is, yeah. It's only 11 o'clock, but it's...
I know. We have all these franchises on. Afterwards,
you do.
Yeah, I feel like utilizing the services or going to the restaurant, whatever the case.
Exactly, So, but another great show, Don. And next week, the great Michael Gerber at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's February 28th. So that is a must-listen-to show.
Definitely. Look forward to it.
You and I are looking forward to that. So I guess I'll see you next week, Don.
Good. Great job, Marty.
Great
Take
Thanks,
care.
Thanks, Don. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.